I'm speaking on the phone with world-renowned violist Kim Kashkashian, who is performing twice at Big Ears Festival 2019. It's a pleasure to talk to you today, Kim. Thanks for taking time to chat.
Thank you so much for listening.
Well, to start off, I'm curious about what attracted you to the viola. It's an instrument that sadly gets overlooked a lot, I think. Did you start off playing the viola?
I started off playing the violin because there was one in the family that had been abandoned by a cousin. So if I wanted music, that was the instrument. And I switched quite early, actually, as a 12-year-old to the viola as soon as one was made available to me. So I wanted that voice. The alto voice.
I think a lot of people have the misconception that a viola is a bigger violin, but it's more than that. Actually, it's not that at all. Could you talk about the differences between the two instruments and what makes the viola unique?
Well, most people will be aware of the voices in a chorus, the soprano, the alto, the tenor, and the bass. And we are the equivalent of the alto voice rather than the soprano voice. So it's a difference of color. It's a darker, deeper, warmer, rounder sound. It is also a little bit bigger, but not so much bigger that a lay person might notice the difference.
How was it transitioning from violin to viola, since you said you started out on violin?
Well, it's really not a major issue. It just depends where your musical identity lies. Again, for the layperson, if you feel and understand the difference between being the top voice, the soprano voice, or being one of the inside voices, it's a character issue, it's a voice identity issue. And knowing those things, the transition between one and the other, is really not great.
I also understand that violas, unlike violins, vary greatly in their sound and color from one instrument to the next. I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit. A viola is not a viola.
A viola is more or less of an experimental instrument based on the fact that back in history, there were tenor and alto violas. So there were really big ones and quite a bit smaller ones. And so as history and music style has consolidated those two instruments into one, it still can flip back and forth in size, whereas a violin is a more standard size and a cello is too, although there are large size violins and cellos as well, what they're called large models. But for us, there's no such thing as a model, which is kind of fun. It's more experimental. And people have done all kinds of experiments making bigger bodies, but with a cutout edge so that one could get around it better, all kinds of experiments that are still ongoing.
And so with a different size, does that come with a different color as well?
Well, the question of color is actually one that affects all string instruments. There's a basic color difference from the viola to the violin, but some violins are much brighter than other violins too. So that if you are playing on a Bergonzi violin or a Guadagnini violin, they're going to sound very different. If you're playing on a Gaspar de Salo viola or a Strad viola, they're going to sound very different, even if they're exactly the same size. And that's a question of the wood that's used, the density of the wood, how thick the graduation of the wood is, what kind of varnish is used. There are so many mysterious, still mysterious and wonderful qualities about the string instruments that make it an art form and not a science.
I know that you have commissioned many works for the viola, working directly with very well-known contemporary composers. I wonder if you could talk about that process a little bit when you have a work commissioned.
As violists, we need more contemporary repertoire in our toolbox because we don't have the violin repertoire of Beethoven sonatas, Mozart sonatas, and concertos that the older styles of music have for violin and even somewhat for cello. So we are consigned to being either thieves, which we also all are, take other people's music and play it, which I think sometimes works very, very well. Transcriptions can be a great source of interest and, in fact, seeing a piece in a new light. It's like turning the kaleidoscope if you're looking at something and you suddenly are playing it on a different instrument and different aspects of it become clear, and that can be really exciting. So there is that. So all violists are thieves by nature. And then we also try to promote as much as possible that new repertoire is written for us all the time. So most violists will be more interested in expanding the range of repertoire into the 21st century. So one of the things I'm playing in this festival is, in fact, a new composition by John Harbison, an American composer. And the piece was finished maybe a couple of months ago. So that's very exciting. We always try to include as much as possible new repertoire like that.
You have had a 30-year relationship with ECM Records. How did this partnership begin, and what makes this record label so special?
Well, there are many, many people who will answer that question about what makes the record label special, but one thing comes to mind. The label would not be what it is, and in fact probably would not exist, without the artistic direction of Manfred Eicher, who has the ability and, in fact, the need to find great music, great musicians, and make a beautiful, creative product out of it. So this is maybe more than any other label, is a truly artistic endeavor on his part. And he takes part in every bit of it, including writing texts and looking for photography for the cover. He's involved in all of it. So the label would not exist without him, and is definitely totally stamped by his artistic affinities.
Another person you have collaborated with for quite some time is pianist Robert Levin. As a collaborative pianist myself, I know how special and unique a musical partnership is. I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit.
Well, we've known each other for decades. So there's a long-standing and flexible partnership there, which has gone through many phases. But I think the main issue that I think we both feel very strongly is that our strengths and weaknesses play to each other's strengths and weaknesses, so that we make a really good team in terms of our musical affinities. And also we breathe together, which is something that you can't train and you can't find just by asking for it. We're lucky that it is that way.
You hear a lot that musical partners read each other's minds. Do you encounter that a good bit?
Well, I'm not sure we read each other's minds, but we read each other's sensibilities, and we read each other's gesture. Yeah, it's not so much about the mind as it is about imponderable, aesthetic, split-second decisions that one doesn't even know are happening. Yeah, and he's unbelievably closely attuned and quick in response. So, yeah, I feel incredibly lucky to work with him.
You will be performing at least one piece in collaboration with him at Big Ears?
Yes, we're playing together on Saturday afternoon, and that's the program that will include the brand new piece hot off the press. So yeah, and also we'll be playing some Argentinian songs that we've transcribed, so there's that aspect to the program also. And then a very standard but incredibly beautiful Brahms sonata, all of it except for the Harbison we've played together for a very long time. But it's always new. That's the amazing thing. It's always new.
What else are you going to be performing at Big Ears?
The night before that, I'm playing a solo unaccompanied viola program of Bach and Kurtag. Kurtag is a contemporary Hungarian composer who I've worked with a lot. And the pieces I'm playing are called Signs, Games, and Messages. And they are like little messages from him to others. So a lot of them are memorial pieces or pieces that are responding to someone that he knows and loves. And they're all little vignettes, little gems. So they go by really fast. What I'm doing in the program, which is kind of interesting, at least to me, mm-hmm. is to juxtapose a movement from one of the Bach dance suites with a response from one of the Kurtag pieces. So that I'm doing a Bach movement and then a Kurtag piece, and then a Bach movement and then a Kurtag piece. So I'm breaking up the suite, Bach suite, by giving it a mirrored response from the 21st century. So it's a kind of interesting project that way.
You have an organization that you founded called Music for Food. I wonder if you could tell me a little more about that.
Yes, of course. Music for Food, we're heading into our 10th year anniversary next season. And we began as a way to create a vehicle for musicians to be good citizens out in the world, to make a difference without actually not using their talents. You know, most mm-hmm. of us will go and volunteer, either teach English or work in a soup kitchen. We all have the urge to serve. But I thought, why can't we serve by using our talents? So we set up a program where any musician, anywhere, anytime, can do a music for food concert, which is a volunteer event. The musicians volunteer. Hopefully the venue volunteers its space, and the audience is invited to donate to a food pantry. And the food pantry is local to where the musicians live or work. So we're trying to build a sense of community between the artists and the place where they live and work. So here in Boston, we do a series of concerts, and they benefit the Women's Lunch Place, which is closest to the venue where we play our concert. And in New York, the concert series there is held in a church, and that church happens to have a food pantry. So, of course, all the donations go directly to that food pantry. So it's a very, very flexible system, and anybody can do it. It's been quite an adventure to get everything set up and moving well and smoothly, and to see how it blossoms in a grassroots way, because we don't advertise, because we don't want to spend money that could be better used giving people meals.
So if someone wanted to sign up for this, how would they do that?
It's very easy. You can go on our website, which is musicforfood.net, and look under Get Involved. And under that tab, Get Involved, there's a place that says Artists. And if you look there, you will find a registration form and a contact number if you have questions. And if you read that stuff and you fill out the form, you will get a response from the Music for Food office, which consists of one young person. And she will help. She will send you the Music for Food logo and help with formatting of programs and anything that you might need. And the only requirements are that the musicians are donating their services, and that 100% of the audience's donation is going to the food bank. And if you do those two things, you can call it Music for Food. And we would love to have anybody on the team.
Well, Kim, it's been an honor to talk with you today. Thanks again, and I look forward to hearing you play at Big Ears 2019.
Thank you. Thank you. I look forward to it, too.
Grammy Award-winning violist Kim Kashkashian, who is performing twice at the Big Ears Festival this year, once as a soloist performing works of Bach and Kortok, and a second performance with pianist Robert Levin, where they will present the world premiere of a new work by Harbison, along with selections from their ECM album, Asturiana. More information about the Big Ears Festival, as well as a complete schedule, can be found at bigearsfestival.com.